at Radio Liberty. And bringing it in the news, the hoping to convince you that usually scoffed at illusion. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, the future will bring. And I have to remind the supporters of this station, they're my viewers of our callers. And of course, we welcome your call, 888-249-465. That's 1-888. We're going to be talking about. He's written a fascinating book that gives tremendous insight. Well, a lot of things that I've never really seen before is the tremendous influence that the Saudis have on the American government and on our financial institutions. But stories is the Craig's about how the Saudis and the bin Laden family had treatment after the 9/11 attack. And out there say it doesn't leave any of this. And I don't think this. I think we have to understand. Whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, we have to look at what happened immediately after the 9/11 attack, specifically as far as the family and the concerned.
Right. Well, I think it's worth remembering that immediately an airspace was as virtually no one could fly. American skies were as empty as they had the Wright brothers. And I had a heart transplant that day, actually on September words. And the plane was forced down short. It's exactly the same. The first one I found left at about 1/3 September 13th, days after 9/11. That plane is secure. They spoke to me on the airplanes I found, including Toon family. And I think what is most approval.
Admit to this, will they?
That's correct. And neither the plane survived the place. I talked to the FBI and the Federal Administration. They all did initially. Now, a lot operated by that, again, that 100, including 24 members of the bin Laden family, left the cut. They were virtually, the vast majority of them were not interrogated whatsoever by the.
And we trust the government with a.
I think what is most disturbing about this, obviously, is the huge role in 9/11. I think a strong case can be made that 9/11 15 out of the 9, and if you look at how it's been financed, its entire infrastructure largely Saudi. What is disturbing here, we are an oil-dependent country. In addition, the Bushes specifically have had, and I believe, a pass on this, which crisis we face certainly crisis.
And of course, anybody who has studied what's happened in the various Select Intelligence Committee said it, and they came up with a very interesting report to censor what the American people could say, and they deleted 28 pages. Now, if there's nothing to conceal, why? I thought that's what it was, all illustration. We were going to hear the truth. Only those 28 pages, because I bought them 200 pages. On 78 pages besides the 28, of the 200 I went through, there was all you really got left was just under the frame. But anything.
This has been probably the most secretive and extraordinary. That I don't know if you're familiar with the National Security, a public interest group that does a lot of things that this administration, I think, extraordinarily secret.
Clinton was as corrupt as the Carter administration was. They keep everything secret from the public. Carter administration secrets that they administration previous administration. Very embarrassed, doing everything to prevent the American. Things that relationship between the Bush family, the Sauds, and the financial relationship, hasn't there?
Absolutely, between Prince Bandar, who is the Saudi ambassador for the United States in 20 years, and the Bush family is very, very close personally. He was very close personal friends with Bush Sr. and went on hunting trips with him. Maine to the Bush retreat. Barbara Bush used to endure Bush, and she allowed him to smoke. He was the only one who actually smoked cigars. He'd drop by in Texas, and if you look at photos of him, the body language, I think, is quite extraordinary. It's more that he's his friend, which is exactly the kind of relationship he has. And in addition, I mean, even more than the person, you have an extraordinary financial in the Saudis. And
yeah, what is the financial relationship?
Well, I traced a total of $1.4 billion
quite a bit of money
from the Bushes and their allies had prominent positions. And I want to be clear, because I'm not talking about a conspiracy or even an explicit quid pro quo. What I'm saying is that the Bushes have been oil executives, both the father and son. Dick Cheney, the vice president, was an oil executive, and James Baker, their friend, confidant, former secretary, was also the name of the biggest oil industry in the world. And altogether, they've had the instrument from the set. You have this relationship, so you come to regard special group associates, and I believe they sort of turn to the dark side of Saudi Arabia. It's important to remember, as I said, that the Saudis have had a key role in breeding, in providing a breeding ground for Islamist terrorism, and I think as a result of all that, they really just did not investigate or take adequate measures to security.
No. National privately held corporations is not Frank of the Third, Tucker Bush, but international criminals. So sure, we were going to have a war that bought up the rights to the fighting vehicle in the early 1990s. We're going to be involved with that into the certain howitzer and things like that. Were the Saudis involved in that? Carlyle?
Absolutely. The Carlyle Group, private equity firm, and it grew. It started in the late 80s and it became one of the companies in the history of the world. Today it manages companies with more than $16 billion in assets. And the role, insofar as the Saudis are concerned, first of all, the Carlyle Group was very much sort of the almost a shadow cabinet of the Reagan, George Herbert Walker Bush, James Baker, Frank Carlucci, Richard Darman, former Prime Minister John Major. And they raised about $80 million in investment royal family, Prince Bandar, as well. They became investors as well. A lot of defense companies that, again, came from Saudi Arabia. As you mentioned, it includes the Bradley Fund made by United Defense. It was owned by the Carlyle Group. So, and the Saudis ended up buying 2,000 of those tanks. They were enormous service and maintained them. So, the Carlyle Group was in around 1993. This was after the Cold War. Like, we didn't have a major enemy. It was smart times.
Well, I think they knew it was going to happen. I mean, you don't put out that sort of money unless you...
They don't make decisions until they know the outcome, unless they know the outcome beforehand. Or at least that was true. Not so it's Bush Jr.
Oil, and when George Herbert Walker W was billing, one of them was empty. They were just out, and then of course how George got out of this pickle.
Right. Well, it's absolutely Arbusto Energy, and it changed names. First, it became Nation. Then his name Arbusto kept in syllable. Bust. He made. Then it became Spectrum 7 was the title. After that, drilling one dry well after another. Finally, Harkin Energy that bought him out, part of a much still relatively small independent company in Texas, but even Harkin Energy was doing very one dry well after another. By now, we're in the late 80s, and according to internal documents, when suddenly investment groups come to it, and they all happen to be BCCI, a bank that's owned at the time by an enormously wealthy Saudi banker. And one subsidiary after another or major stockholder of BCCI to bail out Harkin Energy. And you have to wonder why the Saudis investment. Why would they go halfway invest in Harkin Energy? And I believe the George W. Bush was on the board, and his father, the United States.
And one of the points you make, clever the Saudis are, they always want to be able to president. They always want access to the centers of power.
Absolutely, and I think it's worth saying the size of the political fence. And if you go back to the 70s, people was in the Carter administration in the Office of Management and Budget. And the late Clark Clifford, a former Secretary of Defense and sort of one of the wise men of Washington, both of them got involved in sort of shady careers enormously. When the Saudis started dealing with the Bush fronts and so on, you're down. One can never a direct relationship, but for example, there. But if you looked at its subsidiaries, that's really good. And to believe this was all a coincidence that this happened out of the blue.
What's the BCCI and the...
Absolutely. BCCI, a corrupt financial institution, and it was known as a drug lord's bank, IA bank there, Saudi. Lots of covert operations were financed through it. And you had, for example, Saudi Arabia in funding bin Laden's, who were sophisticated enough to learn, get them of Islamic funding. And if this, in many ways, played a role. It lasted $8 billion of dollars, countless lives. The seems to me that it looks Iraq net today, Soviets. 20 years ago.
And I think you're absolutely concerned, having heard read Donald Rumsfeld's assessment of this war. The Premier of Canada said this war could go on forever. After the Soviet Union, we know what happened to Rome when they went to war after war after war. Countries do end morally. We're going to be back here in just a moment with our special Younger. Will when we return, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-829. This evening is Craig Unger, and we're talking about his book, The House. What's the degree of the Saudi Arabian economy? Now, said something about our economy, $7 or $8 trillion, and this $850 billion of that.
I've seen how high the stock. At one point, I saw. I think the number in the United States is, and in fact, 6 or 7%. Which is,
if we were to pull their money out of here, we would have a real problem. And so they invest in the United, and they're in, what sort of things are they investing?
Well, they're in the most interesting things that you would there in Warner, and Citigroup, that's rather in East Avenue and so on, that we think of as very Americans, all these. The Saudi bin Laden group, which epitomizes in many ways this dual nature of the Saudis. They've done business with Disney, with Porsche. They were distributors. They appear epitomes of Western business, travel in all the right circles. They are very, very comfortable at the highest level. Yet obviously Osama bin Laden is others, and we all know about him, and it's out to be. That is, the Saudi, both sides, they speak to the West. We see them as these enormous billionaires with their language spoken and live quite well in a Western setting. At the same time, they often speak very, very differently when they're back home in Saudi Arabia.
Well, I thought one of them has a 742 to round in, makes Air Force One for his sister.
Not Khalid bin Mahfouz, who was a Saudi banker, about $100 million.
Side.
Right, and he, by the way, he did that when $100 million, about 15 years ago or so, more inflation, so you could get a lot back then. The amount of money...
You're talking of Chris Kringer, so Bush, the House of Saud. There's this one Saudi that has a little 747, and then he spent $1 million redoing this to be comfortable for it. And people have seen the Air Force Ones. This one looks sort of like a poor sister of this feudal prince who has his own $1 million.
As much as $20 billion. And the extravagances you see in the United States, I mean, they also have a very lavish style one of their servants was telling me, $5 in cash, and it's a kind of life would be frowned upon, where it is extremely that kind of act. But you again and again, and it happened in politics as well. And these have been asserting that they're really credible because of Al Qaeda and so. Last week, who is the de facto of Arabia, was blaming the most recent. When I that is the case at all, he was speaking to his domestic audience. He didn't seem to realize that it was being by CNN and translated to the West. So he was brought a completely different message to his own people than he had been telling the West.
Well, the thing is that this is, for all intents and purposes, a funeral. Certainly, on television about the poor women and their beheading people and getting on the public executions.
It really does make us look like hypocrites in many ways, in that really waging a war. We have this great alliance, brutal theocracy things, as you say. They have a Riyadh, the capital of Saudi Square, and where they have public executions all the time. Horrifying as the most recent execution of Nicholas was, this is sort of standard fare in such as one of our big allies.
Could you imagine if we had things on American television? There's just no chance that whatever happened to all of our media here, unless, of course, we were prepared to go to it's the truth really speaks violently anti-Israel.
Yes, very much so. The relationship is so tenuous with them right now. George W. Bush, for being so firmly allied with Ariel Sharon. And I should add that though the Bushes have had an extremely close relationship with Saudi Arabia, and even before the verge of becoming undone, and here to follow through on George H.W. Bush here and said, "What's going on with your son? This is his son," and read him the riot act. And W. Bush wrote a very apologetic letter for a short period of time. But then 9/11 happened, and now they're...
Well, now, Abdullah, the ruler over there, is one man. I know that one of the kings is incapacitated.
King Fahd is incapacitated, and he's effectively not the ruler anymore. He's simply... but there's a real sin that is about to emerge. There's a question of who will succeed him eventually as well.
Hold just a moment. We'll be back in just... Well, my guest this evening, Craig Unger, the book, The House of Sod, a fascinating read, and I recommend it to you. Information that you will not get elsewhere. As far as the relationship between most people, I don't think, really a wealthy.
Well, they're wealthy. They're not big. They may have a few ten. I don't know their exact wealth, really, but I suspect for a president, he's in the $20 to $30 million range. I think that comes certainly not out of great wealth. They're vessels for the defense in many ways. And some of their do have great wealth, and even James Spader, millions of dollars through the Carlyle Group and through his role as one of the most powerful. He's really an architect of the global oil industry. I think it's not so worthwhile to focus on in terms of the defense and oil industry played in those sectors.
So as we look at Baker III, Baker and Bott, we remember that there's maybe a fair number of those families. And they tried to bring Saudi Arabia so they could get records of how much the Sauds were involved in financing the attack on America. The Bush administration did everything they could so that the truth could not come out. And then, of course, the president's his law firm wants information from coming out. And if there's nothing to come out, why are they going to such lengths to try to keep the information from the Americans that want the truth to come out? Unless, of course, they were.
Right. Well, I think you're absolutely right. Again and again, you see... the extended Bush-Baker clan representing for the show, we were talking about the...
Well, this is Dr. Stan, of course, talking about his Bush, The House of Sod. I recommend it to you. It's fascinating reading. A great deal of information that you're not going to get elsewhere. And during the break, we were talking about the fact that a number of the relatives against Saudi Arabia, everything they could, no complicity between the Sauds, there's nothing to come out. But the Bush administration truth from coming out, of course, it is the law firm, a Baker, and trying to block the lawsuit. So you pick up the thought there.
Well, it's a question, and I, as we were saying earlier in the program at the top of the show, when we were talking about the evacuation after 9/11, the Bush White House or duty friends, and it seems to do the latter. And that is really what is disturbing. Here we've had one of the most grotesque national security crises in American history. 3,000 people, there's 2 days after much burning. I happen to live just 5 blocks away, particularly sensitive to me. White House, Duma, Saudis. That, to me, is extraordinary today. I mean, again, President Bush is Baker to take care of the Iraqi debt. And as it turns out, the old regime, it's Saudi. So you have a question, again, of take care of their Saudi friends. And it's very disturbing, this alliance with Saudi Arabia, when it seems to potentially interfere with American
national... The Sauds in the 80s, or was this after the...
Well, it was mostly during the 80s, certainly during the 80s.
It's important that if you don't, is of course, I just don't know the answer to it. So anyway, of course, we have wealthy. Now, I understand there are really lots of, though, this tremendous wealth that they had, and of course, they're spending like money is never going to be. My understanding is that the living standard, they used to have a much higher income, much lower income now, faith, and they're very unhappy with the regime. So how safe is this? And are they looking for possibly...
is deteriorating the South for many years, and it hasn't happened yet. At the same time, things are really going downhill. About 20 years ago, the average Saudi was roughly as rich as the average American. The per capita income was around $20,000 or so a year.
Go ahead.
I just had to switch phones there. The per capita income has increased in the last 20 years. So, and this disparity and the increase of the royal family, $200 a year in the family, hasn't worked that much, enormous amount. So they're very dependent on the price. And it's one reason things are stuck. Things of oil has been going to lower the price right before.
Didn't make that charge, just in his book, The Price of Peace?
Exactly. He had, from my point of view, any president, Republican or Democrat, would ask that, is you have the very, very close long-term relationship, Prince Bandar and the Saudis and the Bush family, it's close, that they could time hikes or in the price of oil or such a way would help the
Prince Bandar say that they were going to go ahead and lower the price of oil. Did he mean?
Well, he had initially, and I mean, this is, they did say they were going to advocate in the next OPEC meeting. If they do get that should help bring down the price of oil.
Noted that, but I hadn't put the two and two together. But 5 million barrels a day to be produced. Relationship between these standing as what I think is a brutal treat. People in many respects. In fact, there was a program just minutes about, I think, a couple of British subjects who have been committed and to confess and have corruption. Government, well, of course, one of the big problems with their religious faith, because this is different than the general Muslim religion, at least it was until recently, wasn't it?
Yes, it's very different. It is much more. It's an extremely puritanical Islamic sect. The most interpretation odd is far, far struggle, and to Muslims, it's a struggle, to an internal struggle, quite simply to be moral. In Wahhabis, it can mean a struggle against Christians. In extreme form, you end up with Osama bin Laden, effectively. It's important that Saudi Arabia is an Islamic theocracy religion. There is no separation between church and state. So this extremely puritanical in Islam are part of the instruments of power. So you have a religious known as a Committee of Preservation of Vi, the breeding ground for terrorism. What's so disturbing about the Saudis to us? but it's quite different.
That really it is this Wahhabi quite radicalism. And it's coming right out of so many other countries, and my preemptive war on Saddam Hussein is going to invite blowback. There are going to be terrible repercussions because, of course, this small group of people intent upon going to war. Middle East is concerned with your knowledge and the background of Saudi. Of course, continue in Saudi Arabia. If we maintain our troops in, that influence our relationship with Saudi Arabia.
I'm afraid it's much easier with scenarios. House of Saud it has to accommodate its military. Our relationship with Saudi Arabia in quite some time. At the same time, if they face them, is likely to be far, far more anti-American. And if they should stay, knowing that the Chinese and the India, their energy in the next 5 or 10 years, an extra 500 automobiles on the 300 million Chinese driver's license in the next are going to skyrocket, as we were always the big customer. But that's not going to be the case in the future. Oil wars in the future. I mean, that's in part what is going on in Iraq right now. Syria has a lot of oil. Its infrastructure, though, is in very poor shape. We're not getting, the United States is not getting essentially seized the oil fields. And it's been scarcely reported at all in the now. Basra and southern at one of the refineries. It's quite disturbing the number of people. Right.
I saw with the blame or something in Iraq, and cut down the delivery of oil about 20%. You're talking about a couple of hundred a day. You cut that border. Why? This begins to happen.
I mean, there's one point in which it's so vulnerable, and if it were to be. It would 2.5 million barrels a day and just skyrocket. Being very, very vulnerable right now. And I mean, if you can think, you want to know where the next terror, and it's very hard to guard hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, it's sort of like tiptoeing through a minefield. You never know when something's got to go up. Terribly uneasy feeling at the present time. We are heading into very, very difficult.
I'm afraid I do. In a lot of ways, I think this war in Iraq is only expensive. That is, it is fuel for a lot of terrorists and many terrorists to join Al Qaeda.
Well, I tend to agree with you, but if you're going to be attacked to being pro-Arab, make a pro-terrorist.
No, I'm just trying to
keep us abreast and let us know really your views. Certainly, Saudi Arabia is a key player in what's going on, under upon their Wahhabs, clerics ready to maintain their theocracy over there. Of course, people that Osama bin Laden looks to for leader. We got a real problem that's important in the book before we let you go.
I'm
great big long book. It's about this is the picture you have on it. So significant because smiling, holding hands with George W. Bush is the walk. You told me on another program that for men to hold high in Saudi Arabia. This is not something that's done. Hands with the Saudi prince, wherever he is.
Right, that is crown is the de facto rule Arabia, and he seems to have a bit of a twink and seems far more comfortable with it than President Bush does.
In fact, very ill at ease as he looks at that picture of the Emperor of the Dust Cloud. The is so intimate, I think quite difficult for him.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, fine. Well, you've been a very good guest. We've let you go, and I'm looking forward to your next. Thank you very much, Craig. Bye-bye. All right. Muslim Saud. And I certainly had a wonderful job. Well, we have a question or comment. Don't hesitate to give us a call. Our number is 1-888. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-82. That's 1-888-464-8295. Well, Doctor, things that came out from the investigations there on the what happened on 9-1-1 was that Prince with says they had no idea. Two of them were living with an FBI informant. The FBI knowing who the terrorists were. They came into the country and not themselves. They didn't have anything to do with the other Islamic people, and that's just a plain lie. On the morning of September 11th, when they went to the airport, because they were on the... let me ask you then. Were stopped and questioned because they were with the six who were on the terrorist watch list. Now, how could this have happened? People wouldn't know. The reason you aren't hearing anything about the facts that are being... I talked to Coma, and they're bringing out all sorts of things about Terry Nichols' contact with the Islamic terrorists there, a movement that was there, the Iraqi over by our government after the first been hearing about that on your even rim. Well, if these things are going on at the trial, how could a controllable thing, because infiltrated at every level, will get through at times. That's the reason I read the news. But I love to get the articles out of places like the New York Times there. Now, you have to read an awful lot of articles, but once in a while, hijacked and questioned on, and the three others who were with him, and then you know what happened? Why they looked at the box cutters and their knives and other weapons. Or had they really? What were they really people? This is enough to remind you that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. Now, I was just asking, why did they let these people get on the planes? Well, we have, I was just a little cutty, any of the warnings or alerts or that the FAA had put out to the 2001 and the fear. He got a letter back and said there were 12 to conceal that information. We couldn't. I would like to suggest that they, there's a pretty good idea that were planning on hijacking the planes. The terrorists were planning. It had been owned by our government for a long time. Certainly they told the president on that. They didn't tell the pilot. They didn't do any of the things that you would do if you were really trying to could to discourage a hijacking. But then it's our head. Would we have been willing to go to war with Afghanistan? If there hadn't been a hijacking, would we have been willing to go to war with Iraq? Reports of tortures at these prisons, the suffering that was there, and people have said that what we did was far worse than any things that would be totally abhorrent. A lot of the things that were done there, but this was an intelligence operation. Quite obviously, these were posed pictures. So we would be inflamed against them in preparation of World War. Understand this. Everything makes logic. Outside, you're not going to find it. You're just going to feel. You have to understand that if you read the papers, you find out why it's the CIA people, but they can't tell you that this is a CIA war. The CIA is directed the Afghan. We fought in Vietnam for 10 long years. Until you understand that the CIA has people planted in the media, and if you don't get my last newsletter, the April newsletter, or get a General Odom, have people, you know, and of course what that's all about is controlling what the American people think. They will want to join the Republican family. To read anybody that has as many outlets as we have, but the small ones. Well, I suppose that Southwest Radio Church and a few of the other, probably much, much larger ministries than we do. There are a lot of other Christian ministries, but they're not going to get into behind the story. Again, the spiritual aspects of it, Southwest Radio Church and perhaps Prophecy Club, as well as we're bringing them. Many of you will decide and help us as we... going on. If you'd like a free copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-5. Consider getting my book, Brotherhood. Consider getting our syllabus. It's called Iraq the End. All of them fraudulent, never fought for the reasons the world religion headed by. We'll be back here for the next. And if you're leaving it, I'd be with you. Well, this is coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind. I convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. The poor survival of Western civilization. Management staff views, the views of our colleagues, and the clear calls from out of 888-2 or here in the city at 465. That's 2-464-8295. But right now, we last for a few minutes. We're hoping Star Parker, and this is a very, very articulate woman. She started out as lived on welfare for a time, and then, of course, she decided that this was no way to live, and she's out there working today to try to help. Realize that if you want to be, you want to be independent, the trouble is welfare mentality feeds on itself. Of course, the longer you run at the moment, you can't accomplish anything. Well, Star Parker has accomplished a great deal.
Doing fine.
Well, now, we don't sort of tell our listeners who don't know about, and that is, of course, same-sex marriage issue, but let's talk a little bit of ministry, what you're doing to reach people.
Government out of the welfare business. I really want them to build the welfare state. Because, as you know, I lived in and out of 7.5 years consistently, and mostly because of decisions that I was in my life. I had a very rebellious addiction, sexual promiscuity, the whole nine. And I went out of that, that I was able to see people are these three problems have a unique situation for those folks, which means plea, community, nothing. That the federal government
all
social engine.
That's fine. Well, of course, that's the end of it, because this is how the government controls. Dependent upon the government controls them, and that's right. The block. And they really want, I think, to deprecate them.
Absolutely.
Anybody who is totally dependent upon government really can never be dependent upon themselves.
You're absolutely right, but this thing is that that are living under the rules that I used to have to live under, say, don't get married, and we'll send you another check. Really want out, so that I get myself in. Those are the ones that are now trying to figure out how to raise a husband in the household, and a promise that Uncle will take care of them from womb to tomb. That Hillary Clinton keeps. No, the problem with the welfare state is liberals. They're the ones to office that will engineer this great society out of Johnson that says we will do it for you. That's the problem with the welfare state. It's not the people involved in getting. It's the people that support this, the left-wing liberals.
Well, they're the ones who want to control. I think so difficult for the average individual to understand. Because social is so great. It's compassionate. We're here from the government. Any government that can, whatever you need is whatever you have, and regulate and control you, because all your life and your very soul.
That's right. It is against those. When you think about the whole concept of wealth, to take from one person something that another person has to take from and give it to them, and thou shalt not covet. So it is there is a problem. And people ask me to make sure that because I understand that in order for people to really recover their lives, you're going to have to allow them to discover personal responsibility.
But don't,
and that's really the
thing, Star, that people have different worldviews. I mean, once you became a Christian, people who are not world Christians do, and then find excuses for problem, figure out what was wrong with socialism, because I began reading things to law and some of these other classic books. Why didn't I ever think of it? And I graduated from the University of California. I was dumbed out. I probably one of the dumbest people in my life. When I came here, of course, I was a physician. I had a good education. I didn't know anything about society or life, and I sure didn't know anything about God.
Social engineers of the left make sure right, there's an accountability there. And then to be responsible with those things that we do learn about. That's why we have to get social services. Because in order for people to really understand something on my own, you're not going to be able to have these safety nets. And I talk about this in my book, as you know, my new book, Uncle Sam's Plantation, is about this whole safety net mentality, how the left replace emissions and bad choices with that anymore. I didn't have to think about it. They will pay for me to pay for me to raise it. This is the of political social. The reason that I work on where do we go from here? We've got to continue education so that we can put some absolutes back into. We've got to continue. We have choice when it comes to our retirement, so so that we're not ending up on the welfare state once we worked all of our lives, depending on Social Security or the government. It all works together. I'm so involved.
People get copies of another book, but one letter Coughlin to get me a copy myself. But tell our listeners how they can get your book.
Oh, I will, Jeremy, but I'll make sure that you get one. It's called Uncle Sam's Plan. In fact, I just finished book tour. It's just come out and surf the net. They can get it at the Amazon. Uncle Sam's Plantation. And the subtitle is How Big Government Enslaves America is Poverty. Then why are we in this war on poverty? $10 a year, more than $1 billion a day. Most people can't even name a program. After I go through chapter one, then I go through my story in chapter two, then I look at how in chapter three, coming out of the civil rights movement, what programs those that decide to live eligible for, just because this is what taxpayers are subsidizing. So for people that say welfare, but I don't know exactly what it means, then they want to get my book, because as they get to see the horror of what destroy their life, prevent this in the future, and how we're going to help those that are now.
Well, let's go into you know, they think, well, they just get a check at the, you know, the children, because a check, the children would starve to death. Why don't you go into what they really go into this stuff?
The check is because once you get the subsidized housing, owns a little bit of the cash, assume that they're doing something. But no, it was interesting, because when we were doing the welfare debates, I would receive death threats against myself. They said we were going to. But yet, when you look at that's a whole other program. So when folks say, check, people are paying for the program. I talk about WIC, which is Women Programs, the child. You were not eligible for the minute they say, I'm the daddy is. So what we had to do is this what we really want, to subsidize illegitimacy? When you start looking at birth, the birth rates are already startling as a nation, but when you think about the social pathologies that accompany it, the ill health, we should be concerned. What my book is all about, to save first and then second. And then, of course, I go into tax situations and then look for some solutions out of it.
I look at the black family. Before we had all these wonderful black family in the city, and the black family was a solid part of the community, father and a mother, and they'd raise their kids, and maybe the schools, some of the schools. But, you know, percent of the black are on prison parole. We didn't have any of the black children born out of wedlock.
Not exactly.
I mean, we've family, and absolutely. I'm just afraid they're going to do it either, but they haven't.
But you know what? It is alarming, because I run CURE, the Coalition on Urban Renewal and Education, and we are very concerned about what's happening even to the white family, because wealth is a destroyer. It doesn't get. And what's happening now with this message of illicitness and don't worry about what happens, because we have these safety nets for you. We're 3% out of wedlock birth rates in the white family, higher than what it was when they started when Johnson. Black out of wedlock birth rates were in about 22%. 20% of husbands were in with their wives. Then today it is 7 out of 10. It is. And in the white family, we're seeing the Escalante community. In fact, Hispanic out of wedlock birth rates are now percent. This is concentrated single trust. You have the now running through the prisons. And I mean, this is really going to fight if we don't start saying, no, enough is enough, and start really changing the welfare policy.
Well, you know, Chris,
did a good job in 96, but there's still more to be done.
Fanny family was always very traditional.
Our newest community. Their lives are doing just fine. They're the bottom, they work their way up. But those that enter the wealth droid and win social pathology, prison records, etc., etc., this is the problem with the government, because it's going to come out.
All right, fine. Well, I guess my telephone number is 24Liberty. That's 1-888-464-8295. And the start is this movement out from personal experience. Now, I'm going to play the devil's advocate. So, okay. So what are we going to do with the mothers and these programs? How are they going to end the work?
Saw the roles immediately drop. Because one thing that most Americans didn't know at that time is that women and 9 million children, 60% of them had a high school diploma, one child, and some work experience to move on. So now we are down to these hard cases that you're seeing. That's individual. It can be solved individually and very uniquely, locally. So what policy changes to the state? If they're with their counties and with their cities. They're probably not the problem here. And let's see if we can solve these problems. Senator, now Attorney General John Ashcroft, put the charitable choice provision called the faith-based initiative. That are private, that understand individual is unique, and each of their problems are unique, and we need to look at them that way and start working with them that way.
And I really believe that the church should be in care of people. If you don't belong to a church, are they at the local community?
The churches who dropped the ball on this, because, you know, they said preach the gospel. That's the first thing they need. And there are many remedies that the only thing these men are mad about happened to change my life. And then I went to their church, and so we have to do is say, okay, what did Jesus do? He said every time he was confronted with poverty situations or illness, that you just gave, he said, bring them to me. He said, you help them, you feed them. This is our responsibility, but that's the youth to help people in their individual unique problems. Can I just assign somebody a number? And the woman that you just described, whose children or husbands no longer can be individuals from the help her uniquely and individually.
Until she can stand on her own feet. The difference in the world between charity and welfare. As the evolve of charity, welfare, and I hate it, it's government programs. Society, you're not entitled to anything other than the right to fail. Here in just a moment, with Star Parker, welcome to America, articulate spokesman for the philosophy of individual freedom unto God I know. And here's Radio Liberty and Star to sit down and let them go to commercials. And then we have time to time as far as paying for the bill. We have Fort Wayne, Indiana, our shortwave station.
That's wonderful. So I just left New York. Don't mention me. And we up in that storm they had, and next 3 hours, as well as 3-hour delay of flight to Phoenix, and then they drop us off, and there are no flights off. I'm like, don't you care? That's exactly what I want to discuss right now, but I would welcome call to
Pennsylvania. That's
Roger. Pennsylvania's cool.
Yeah, hi. Boy, I think I'm in love.
All right. Oh, I'm not married. Where are you in Pennsylvania? I was just up there, too. I just did a college up in Pennsylvania, way up. Oh, it was way up, in fact. I was drove up about...
Yeah, you were the brother. You can't, Parker.
That was another lady.
Yeah. Okay.
But you know what? No, I actually started in a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, I put my foot in my mouth.
But associated with him and with Pat, for he started going into media full time, which is America, to try to solve some of these same things today.
All right.
More serious question. We'll see if we can have our first spat. What do you think about the faith-based initiatives business, which I call sanctified socialism, and not so much because of the inevitable federal control that will come with that fundamental...
Asking her what she thinks. You're telling us what
you... So, and I'm glad I like that, the sanctified socialism, because you're going to love my solution for the poor. When John Ashcroft offered the choice provision in the welfare bill said was, if you are going to work with private in any form, then do not discriminate against the church organization when the state loads. What they faith-based initiatives, back to Washington, D.C., the Development of Action Program lacks in all the rules to make sure these faith-based organizations, politicians don't understand is that this is redistribution, is actually a thou shalt not steal, two, thou shalt not, somebody has some money, you have the right to take someone else's money and give it to them, not in agreement now in Washington, D.C., faith-based initiatives. The solution to this, we really want to help vouchers, so they want to get this money out of faith-based. But the solution in terms of the organization itself is to give the people their money back in terms of tax credits. Do not give direct grants to these individual charities and churches.
Okay, fine. Anything else, Roger?
God bless. Now I know I'm in love.
Okay, bye-bye. Okay, fine. My telephone number.
No, it's true. He's absolutely...
All right, I telephone 824 Liberty, or here in the Central Coast, 64-8295. I got so busy listening to Roger there, we forgot to get our stations back. But that's all right. Most people now are back with us. Our guest is Star Parker. We're talking about Sam's Plantation, is that it?
Because actually, when you look at what liberalism is,
population were in the process of destroying the Hispanic population. And you have to, once you become dependent, they're going to tell you what to do. You're not going to have your check. And of course, the one thing is, most instances in the house, and so he's either got to sneak in at nighttime. What's happened, you know,
we've
is we've destroyed the black family.
Right. Well, we've changed quite a bit of that in the federal welfare bill, but let's look at the concept of just govern lives. It's not just in the welfare. When you think about Social Security, it's all your life, they force your money in, and they tell you exactly what you can do, whether you can work or to get this little bit of, as opposed to allowing you to take that same money from a different account. So it's not just the AFP's TANF, temporary assistance for what we would think of as welfare, as welfare bill, to the Social Security, all of these government programs to where they're demanding live off the government and depend on government. It is straw's form.
But you know, the frightening thing about this is this will implode. There is no way that the government can continue doing what it is doing and spending more than it's taking in, spending this next year pretty close to money they're going to steal from the Social Security and Medicare, close to three quarters, and things don't look any better for the following year.
The system would be totally bankrupt.
This is a wonderful country, and yet this country can and is being destroyed. But secondly, it's being, you only need to look and see what's happening to our kids, to these music, I don't know what even want to call them.
Society to allow the federal government to control education and to monopolize it, to force all poor kids, for sure, into these government-run institutions that they call schools. Now, wealthy people can get out because they can just go buy private education. Middle-class people can move out a little bit and try to control a little bit of what their kids are learning. But the basic concept itself, to have a Department of Education to then say that the federal government is going to set these standards, we're setting ourselves up for a fall. Anytime you have government involved, you're going to have, you mentioned earlier, Frederick Bastiat talked about this extensively, and you're going to have those that say, put in there. That means that all objected to what a politician decides that election year. And I just don't...
No, I don't think it's what they had in mind. They understood these problems back, you know, the 1800s. In fact, that you more than gave the people, many times came, and you destroyed them. And England, at the time that this country was founded, even spoke out against the sort of things we're talking about. And that's why they wanted to limit the power of the federal government.
Okay.
So it could never be the big daddy. The daddy that could provide for you has to be able to control you. Okay, if we're going to be back here in just a moment with Star Parker, welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 495. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Star Parker, and we're talking about the welfare state. We're talking about Uncle Sam's Plantation. We're talking about a program that has changed the entire thrust of America from where we were guaranteed not happiness of happiness, see the ability to fail, but it was never to be with people, and it wasn't even to people. It was the community to provide for the care of the people who couldn't themselves. It was their and we had places where people could go, and nobody starved to death in the United States. And I can promise you there are people today who go without food. They can't afford it, and governments got into the system, and I practice medicine. I will tell you that nobody went out without government got into it. An awful lot of people just can't afford medical care, and this is happening with every aspect of our society. And look what's happening to the price of homes today. As government interferes in the home market and is going to provide homes for everybody, and the average home in a lot of communities is up to $600,000 here. The average home in where I live is well over $400,000. How could the average family ever afford something like that? And it is all a direct product of government interference in the free enterprise system. So why don't you pick up the story from there, Star?
Well, it absolutely is. And in fact, it's interesting that you had camp in Washington, D.C. last week, and we were talking about when he put the idea on the table that we should allow these housing projects put their own ownership. Because when you talk about and the pursuit of happiness is directly connected with property ownership. The reason people pay own, and it's, what's his name, Summers, out there at Harvard University, new president there, he says, when was the last time that you saw somebody's car? We don't, but your own car you are going to wash. And therefore, we have to allow for people to own. And that, my granddaddy, he was one generation out of slavery in South Carolina. And you know what his edict was? Liberty and a gun. And this is where it stood, that you need to first own property, able to protect that property. Protect that property against...
Bring our stations back on, Boyd. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and our guest specifically talking about the to be able to... You've got to have property rights here, and under the name of protecting the snails and protecting the ferns and protecting the wetlands. We used to call them swamps because they breed disease. Now we call them wetlands.
You know, the environmentalists are totally out of control, but there's another big monster, too, and it's called eminent domain.
Go ahead.
The government has stuck its finger in a lot of different places, and until Americans finally get a reality check to understand that one of the basic tenets of our freedom is to own property so that we can take care of your neighbors because you have something at stake, then we are going to start that. This war on terror is not by accident. This war on terror is a wake-up call for all of us to say what is really important. What are our values? What does freedom really mean? So I look at it as an opportunity, actually, for us to revisit here in America the concepts of freedom and personal responsibility, which means that we're going to have to start saying, how can I take care of me and mine, as opposed to saying, let me let government take care of these decisions for me.
Amen. What America was all about, you know, of course, these ideas of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they really go back to John Locke. And John Locke, writing in the 1600s, wrote about life, liberty, and property. And,
right.
Of course, that was going to use in the Declaration of Independence was life, liberty,
right.
and property. And then somebody put in the pursuit of happiness. If you read the Constitution, there are two places it talks about life and liberty. And it talks about life. And liberty and property is the very essence of your ability to have liberty. If you can't
exactly. free at all, and that's the reason that we want to encourage it. And it gets me to the point I was making earlier about Jack Kemp and his idea to even allow the poor to buy into their housing projects, so that they then can own those. You're talking about the rising property prices. Now, if they were able to buy that 20 years ago when he first put the concept of property ownership on the table, and if the left didn't strike it down, then we would see every American now partaking in the freedoms that are available for us, but also in the responsibility that comes from property. That's what is a major concept of the foundation of, because when you own something, you take care of the community's work. When you own them, you take care of it.
And of course, we have a road association. Associations take care of the road, even though we all use it. We all pay for it, but we're waiting for us to trim the weeds along the side of the road. And I keep thinking of my clipper and just go fix them. Well, somebody else is going to do it.
Somebody else is going to do the work when I tell you those streets are trashy.
Oh.
And they can blame the city and the government all day long, but it's like no one told you to throw your trash on the ground. Put it in a trash can.
Oh,
so you're absolutely right. All of us as Americans have a role to play in this, and that's what I was saying about this war on terror. If we don't learn trying to sell freedom to a community spirit, then we should look at ourselves and we should have a new understanding of what that really means and dear, and then for us, right.
I'm into that, and Chris, I believe that liberty is individually moral people, because society would limit unless you have moral people. If you have limited, no laws or regulations and immoral people, you're us. And increasingly, we're crisis and chaos breaking out. And here in even the area where I live, we're seeing in violence and kidnapping and rape and crimes. I saw this, you know, 20 years ago, but when you lose the moral foundation for the society, when the Supreme Court says, oh, we couldn't have those children reading the Ten Commandments,
right.
if they meditated
yep.
upon them, then we have created, and nobody ever wants to point the finger really at the Supreme Court justices, but the church has spoken out a long time ago, country and about its proud Christianity that our churches seem to have forgotten.
All of these discussions are going to lead back to education. You remove that foundation, the moral absolute truth of the moral chaos, children, that there is no absolute rightful aspiring for. I mean, Paul Johnson visited this book, the Hill, when he asked about altruism and together, coexisting. Well, altruism, the absolute authority, eternal truth, then all you have is raw ambition. So that you can just go out and acquire a bunch of things, over 20 years just to get some stuff, go just steal somebody, put yourself into prostitution, etc. And understanding that there are rules to life, as there are rules to every other discipline in life. There are rules to math, there are rules to to music, there are rules to art, there are rules to life. And that's the question today as we start on a moral high ground of freedom. We're now that we're seeing all, on our news of what we know is vile activity. Well, if there's no evil, then how do we say that's vile? We've got to say there are absolute rights. This is what's a big struggle with liberals today, and that's why they're coming out of Iraq today, that you would have men who develop themselves to the point that they say, I don't care, I'm just going to do whatever I want.
It hasn't really disturbed me, and it was Rumsfeld and Joint Chiefs of Staff, anyway. And, of course, the people on the... this is a terrible thing to do. It's a terrible way you're treating the people. Well, the lawyer said it was all right. And I thought to myself, you go to lawyers to tell you what's right? I mean, don't you have any... Are you incapable of saying what was done was wrong? And he said, oh, no, this was wrong. And I thought, my God.
We need ourselves to. How could they say it's okay to kill babies in the womb? Thank God. They've reached beyond what would be lawful. They go into, well, this is absolutely right. It's totally out of control to the point where, my goodness, if I can qualify for it because I marry my daughter as long as she can, this is where we're going. We have lost our moral society and absolute law. If it's just up to the Supreme Court, the court might think that anything we do see is me. They also ruled there was nothing wrong with slavery. Were they right? I mean, look at the Civil War side of this war.
Well, we got real, I think it all came here out of the, and it can't be your rules. I think it's got to be God's rules. They're good enough for the founding fathers of this country. They've been good enough for us. And if we in the history of the moral development of Western civilization, then, of course, civilization will fall because America is the last holdout. Was the really the highest level of development of Western civilization, and America is on the downward.
It's good news. They're still on the throne because you're just saying. I was living a very just total self-destructive life. God reached down into that little black hole there. I really think that the body of Christ is going to rise to this hour. You know, even in the issue of the boy. We start the ban on parking before the Supreme Court because now the left is going to file a lawsuit against what President Bush did, and now it's in the courts, three different courts. So you've got Nebraska, you've got New York, all getting ready to decide on partial birth abortion. Is this ban constitutional? Well, you know the same decision that the United States Supreme Rejudge wrote. Did God give life? And is that should that life be protected by our society?
No, because I'm not optimistic. The Supreme Court doesn't on this.
Well,
you know,
well,
people
true.
Say you don't. You know, on the court. Well, if you don't have somebody with religious standards, what sort of standards do they got?
Standards
have?
Do they have?
And this is the big problem in the world. There's either they got to accept that there are absolutes. There is no God. There are no, and that's exactly where we Supreme
there's
Court.
No one can do whatever he wants.
And of course.
Yeah, if there are no absolutes, a man can do whatever he wants, and a man can do whatever he wants, then all this is good, too.
Right, well, I think out there in the front lines, why I'm really optimistic. I wouldn't think that there's this number of good people out
there. Congressmen, to get them to refocus on what is, have big battles before us. We have this the Massachusetts decided, and it will become law next week unless people flood that Massachusetts telephone call. It will not happen. We will not until we define marriage to say it is between husbands. We would need that in our lifetime, but we do. So we're going to have to do that as well.
All right. Well, I think there's so many things, and there are websites out there. Do you have a website, Star?
Yes, my website is Urban Cure, urbancure.org.
Urbancure.org, if they go there.
Oh, they'll find information about what we're attempting to do with my organization, Cure, for Renewal and Education, and one of them is to promote these ideas that we've been talking about for the last hour in the inner we're starting to on many of these issues ideas are the poor and how we're going to we've gotten up to 100 on our network in Washington D.C. 28th we're going back to the Lincoln Memorial on the anniversary of when Dr. King delivered his I Have a Dream speech to have a call for righteousness about defining marriage in the Constitution.
Well, I think that's exciting because if the, we can ministers, they will be able to reach. We're going to do it. We're certainly not going to get the truth. Ministers can get it out. They just have to realize that they not only have the right, on the moral. I mean, yes, we need to learn this, not learn the word of God, but we have to apply it in our society. Today is the normal leader of the flock, as it were. And at one time, they were the one of the major political forces in America. I don't want them to say
not
Republican
anymore,
or Democrat. I just want them to stand for the word of God and for righteousness. And, you know,
now in the two parties.
Oh, yeah.
So they have to exercise their in their voting power. And you'd mentioned that because I was just with a couple of the ministers that just marched to allow the traditional civil rights leaders to basically be a black America. I think how in the world do we get involved? We pay too much attention to the sacred and ignore the fact it's all sacred. That when you talk to the Lord too, Jesus was very clear when he talked about redistribution, because in Matthew he told us that he distributed talents. One got five, one got two, and one got one, but he didn't take from the one that had the most and give to the poor one. And in fact, he rebuked the poor one for not doing the best that he can do with that one. And so we have to look at the scripture and then apply it to every area of our lives, including our political lives. And there are clear differences these days.
Well, there certainly are, and at least the state level, and it'll be almost a level as marked as it was, has the good things that it can, but there's some terrible things that are coming out.
There's some terrible things in Washington right now. We have a president who is going to stand for truthful policy. He is going to protect Israel. This is the role of government in many areas of our lives, including an excessive tax from good people. But we also know that this president is going to have good men that can accurately. So there are reasons that we would say we
all right, fine. What do we have? I'm Chicago. Hi, Tom.
Good. Thank you so much, Dr. Stan. You're beaming in the WA out of the suburbs of Chicago, Sandwich, Illinois.
Oh, I'm so glad we're getting a good signal this time of night.
We're with him, Dr. Stan, and I hope a lot of the people in this are as grateful as I am that you're...
We need to get them all listening. That's what...
Well, that's what it's all about, and appreciate you having these wonderful and great.
Okay,
thank
Tom.
You.
Just wanted to just be thankful that you're on the air, and I hope that Stan's book.
I hope so. Let's go to Tim calling.
I've got a couple of questions.
Okay,
one
go ahead.
One for you, Dr. Stan, and one for Star, but I'd like to make a comment first.
Go ahead.
Okay, I am a minority person. For the last 100 years, the white man has been controlling all the gold and diamonds out of Africa and robbing Africa. That's one reason why, the main reason why Africa is so poor. Now, Star, my question to you.
Tim, I would say it is not the white man, but it is an evil group of white men. And all white men for what is any more than you can condemn all a small number have done.
Well, he is still continuing in Africa, but him all these pressures. But stop it. You have a white political power. Everybody in power, 50 white governors, 100, and 450 out of 475. For why couldn't I conclude that you have tax presentation?
All right, Tim.
Because I don't think our racial means that there are many blacks in office that I would disagree. Whites in office, I would disagree.
Political positions.
Well, let's see now.
Not if they're going to be members of the welfare caucus. But in partial birth abortion, which is the ninth month, where we breach the kid and throw it away as discarded. All 39 members of vote against reform. All 39 against economic empowerment when it laws against vote against so that allows personal retirement account. So I'm not sure of the factor. What we have to do is look at personal, even the Hispanic caucus. If simply because they're black, then why does Africa? Why does Mexico have the problems that it does? I don't believe that it has to do with the skin is right or wrong in their heart. Representation. I have all these senators in particular. You mentioned the senators, all 100 of them are white. There's there that happen to be white on the outside, but I'll tell you, God fearing Jim Talent, Senator Rick Santorum. I couldn't have a representing my interest in watching those three men.
Powell, the Secretary of State, is black.
You know,
hate to say that,
it doesn't matter. That's
it really doesn't.
It doesn't matter. Leave in their heart. Have to go today.
You're absolutely right. You know, even the man will be known not by the color of his skin, but
and everybody that says that they follow in his legacy, in place. Race is supposed to be the number one issue. We have affirmative action. We have, I don't even know the number we have these days, and yet our inner cities are getting worse than they've ever been. So I can't say that this question is black and white.
You're
this
absolutely right.
Moral.
It's in your heart and how you feel about the Lord and whether you're an honest person. I think you're going to be well. I guess this evening has been Star Parks. Thanks for the color of your skin. It's what you feel about God, what you feel about life. And we got too many racists in the world. We need a lot more statesmen who love the Lord, fear the Lord. Well, this is the. We do hope that many of you out there will decide you're going to want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as. 5 hours a day, we reach out across this country by radio and shortwave and by satellite and by internet. And we are getting a growing audience there to watch shortwave. 4 hours a day now on shortwave. 5 hours a day. It's been wonderful to see this little ministry that's there are people out. We hope you will. Number 1-800-5. That's 1-800-5. You can get the book, Brotherhood of Twain, The Spiritual Battle Behind AIM. And then you really should go to our website and video to our programs on the internet 5 hours a day directly. But you can pull down the archives that go back about 6 weeks. I want you to tell other people about our website to encourage to learn how to talk to people, how to appeal to them. A lot of people don't want to hear it. And our message is not necessarily the joy of the Lord, but the greatest thing you can do for people is you very well start looking for the Lord. I know this is what brought me to life and going to die. And it's pretty hard sometimes to sink into Christians unless they understand how bad things are in the world. So I know that we touch some people's lives. All of our efforts would be worthwhile. So, space, 1-800-544. Phone number is 1-800-544. We ask you to pray for America. We have answers, but for my ministry, Radio Liberty. For our and so until tomorrow, well, let's see, I won't be here tomorrow evening. I'm going south to give a talk on Saturday. We will have a program, however. It'll be a fascinating program. And then, of course, we'll be back with you on Monday. Until then, may the Lord be with you.